everybody. Welcome. It's Saturday Night Live with the Hoaxbusters. And here we are for another exciting show tonight. We got some little videos we're going to be inserting in here and there. In fact, we're going to start it off with a video.
Before we even
get into Miss Diane's discussion. But again, we want to thank Speak Free Radio for having us on. And we just want to make a couple updates. Ryan Massano's show is now on before our show. Just to let everybody know, his show comes on at 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern time now. And our show obviously comes in after. But I think there's a break of an hour in between the two shows. So I don't know. I think they just play music. But if you want to listen to Ryan Massano, you might want to get on obviously at 5 o'clock Eastern time, and you can listen to him. And he had a nice guest on today, which was really good. So anyway, before we get into our book review, today's a special day in history, folks. I hope you know what day it is. It's April 20th. And April 20th is actually the anniversary. I think it's the 135th anniversary of Hitler's birth. So Miss Diane wanted to play this video, right, Miss Diane?
That's one of three, yes.
Okay, so we're going to play this right now because we want to thank Mr. A.H., for all the things he contributed to the world at the time, and it's just too bad nobody listened to him. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, the only guy's birthday that should have been done and people celebrating was his. So, hey, let's play this right now.
We can turn it up, maybe?
I feel you, that is how I know you go far across the distance and spaces between us. You have come to show you go on. Wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on. Once more, you open the door and you hear in my heart and my heart will go on and on. Just one time can last for a lifetime and never let go till love was when I loved you one true time. I hold you in my life will always grow. Wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on. Once more, you open the door, and you'll hear it in my heart. My heart will go on.
I'm sure that's going to make us popular amongst us.
Obviously, we're not in it for the popularity. The thing is that it was really bad in the 20s, right after World War One. Horrible to the degree that they felt such relief and gratitude for the deliverance that they received when Hitler came to power. And it was national, it was universal, and it wasn't forced. People, that was true emotion that people had, gratitude.
Well, there's been no other personality on this earth that has had the accolades from his own people now, okay? His own people, like Hitler.
That's
nobody.
Right.
There's been no president, no dictator, no anybody that has received that accolades as Hitler. But they want to make it look like all the German people were crazy. So,
well, the thing was, they went into Austria, and it was the same thing in Austria. And when they went in the Ukraine, there was such a relief that the Germans were delivering them from the Soviets, as Ingrid Rimland Zundel had talked about. She was getting ready to be loaded onto the transport to go to the Soviet Union when the Germans came in and stopped it. There had, you know, you can't make this stuff up. There's going to be gratitude, and it'll last beyond whatever crap they're going to throw at you, which they did after the war. Yeah. So I'm just very glad that we can honor him today on one day of the year.
Yeah. The Jews today should be thankful to Hitler because they survived. Okay, even though they think 6 million of them died, but we know that didn't happen.
Well, math doesn't.
But the point is, the majority of them talking now.
Yep.
You survived. You should be thanking him. No, you ought to get on his case and say he was the most evil guy that ever walked on the earth.
Well, they've got to keep that going. They need that villain going because they've got to keep the money coming in.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, if Hitler came back today. I mean, they actually made a movie. I don't know if you ever saw the movie. Look Who's Back, or He's Back, or whatever.
That was excellent.
And it was a guy that looked like Hitler, and he went back to Germany. And, you know, he was walking around the streets. And
he was talking to people.
It was really good.
They couldn't believe it. It was like you can watch him win them over. And he would talk like one-to-one or small groups and then larger groups. And there were people that were trying to not like him, but it's almost they couldn't help it.
Right. See, if Hitler came back today and he had the same attitude and disposition, obviously, and he was, you know, talking to the people out there, a lot of people probably, a lot of the truthers, I got to say truthers, you know, because those are the people that would probably listen to him.
Well, so, I think people who despite themselves, he would be talking like he did at the time in his day, talking to the issues of the day, and they're not going to be able to refute him.
That's right. And that's the point. Mm-hmm. So all these people are going to say, whoa, this guy's telling the truth. Mm-hmm. He's telling the truth. But again, look at the opposition he'd get today. My goodness, they'd burn down the place where he's speaking.
Oh, they try. I'm afraid the support, though, and he wouldn't come in gangbusters or in a coup or armed resistance. It'd be just like, and I think in the movie, was very well presented. We have it on our BitChute channel.
But yeah, it was really good.
If
you want to watch that, I think it's called He's Back or Hitler's
Look Who's Back.
Luca's back. Uh-huh. Excellent, excellent video that was done about him. And anyway, so, okay, we're going to move on. We're going to, have Diane go through what we usually do on our program. She's going to cover the book there, 6 Million Fact or Fiction. And again, you can get it on the Money Tree Publishing site,
which I do
recommend that you do. And I don't know where you are in the book, Diane, so just tell us where you are, and then you
can
continue on with your discussion of it, okay?
Just finished a three-part coverage of Auschwitz, particularly like its purpose, the accusations made, how it, Peter Winters, the author, and with Dave Gaharie's editing, debunked the lies. Now, this chapter is Rudolf Hess, Confession and Memoirs. He was the first Auschwitz camp commandant from May 4, 1940, the time it was established, to December 1, 1943, and again from May 8, 44 to January 1945. His confession and subsequent memoirs are one of the most quoted proofs of the mass gassings at Auschwitz and therefore deserve particular attention. Firstly, it should be borne in mind that, as discussed previously, it was not possible for Mass Gathering to discover 60 pages dealing with Auschwitz. It wasn't possible for the mass gassing to have taken place at Auschwitz, and most certainly not in the manner contained in the Hearst confessions and memoirs, and by the way, tortured confessions. This important fact must never be lost sight of, and all statements should be considered in that light. Hearst made at least three statements. The first one was an 8-page typed document in German. The second one was there were many corrections and additions. I bet it got real confusing in that one. The second one was a 20-page type document in English. Now, and then Hess added a declaration to the document saying that he understood English as is written above, but he did not understand English. And the third statement was a shorter one written completely in English by someone else and only signed by Hearst. And this statement asserted that he had, on Himmler's orders, personally arranged for the gassing of 2 million people between June, July 1941 and the end of 43. And these were later transcribed into a single document in English, and together they became known as the Hearst Confession. Again, who's transcribing it? It's going to be in English. He didn't read or understand English. Okay. And so Hess had to go before Nuremberg. And this was following, and where a number of bogus numbers were dictated. There is an actual transcript that I'm not going to read through the whole thing, but he was compelled to confess to mass gassings of millions of victims. And I said, that really sounds like, particularly since it's been disproven, it sounds like obviously coerced.
I want to say something about this.
Sure.
All right. You have to understand, up until 1989, they said the official death numbers in Auschwitz was 4 million.
Right.
Okay. Up until 1989. Now, again, understand what's going on here with Hess. Huss, I guess that's how you say
it. It's actually Hearst.
He said, okay, Huss said that 2.5 million were gassed and 500,000 were shot. Okay, that's what he said. So their figure of 4 million isn't even what Huss said. So you see the problem they got here? They know they got a big problem here because their figure is way overinflated about how many people died in the camp by about, you know, maybe 20 times. And then Haas, he's coming up with a whole different figure. Mm-hmm. And he's supposed to be the guy in the camp. So then he's not telling the truth. I mean, you can't fudge figures like this and get away with it. And they knew that. They had a big problem. Okay, so again, who are you going to believe? You're going to believe Haas? Are you going to believe up until that time period, 4 million? And their excuse about the 4 million is this. Well, the Soviets were the ones that came up with that 4 million number. It doesn't matter who came up with the number. You're still using it.
That's right.
You're using it all the way up until 1989, until a revisionist shows you that your numbers were way the hell off.
Yeah.
Way off. Yeah. Okay. And revisionist exposed you. And so now you had to get rid of that figure. And what do? They lower the figure down to under a million eventually. Under a million. And they changed the plaque too.
Yeah, that's right. We've seen a number of pictures regarding that. They asked him, did you kill this many Jews? Now remember, he has had probably at least 3 days of day and night severe torture. And now they're giving him the questions that he's supposed to respond in a certain way. And also to contribute. When he was talking about it, he said, we executed about 400,000 Hungarian Jews alone at Auschwitz in the summer of 1944. That is all true, witness. Hess says yes. That basically they would read it off and he'd have to say yes. And this Colonel Amen, and he was talking again about the Hungarian Jews and about when exactly that was. And then he said, mass executions by gassing, this is Colonel Amen, commenced during the summer of 41 and continued until fall of 44. I personally supervised executions at Auschwitz until 1st of December 43. And so I received all orders for carrying out these mass executions directly from one of the agencies of the SS. and are those statements true? And he would say, yes, they are. I wonder if he would, even after all that. And again, what's that movie that we, Goya's Ghost, that they can make you say anything with torture.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That, well, that, since you brought that movie up, Diane, I think people should know about that movie. Mm-hmm. If you really want to see a really good movie about torture and getting people to confess things they were forced to confess. All right. Watch Goya's Ghost, because it has to do with my favorite church, the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Okay. But how evil they were and how the things they did to people to get them to confess as heretics or whatever. Okay. Because there's nobody that can endure torture. Nobody,
right.
nobody
right.
can endure torture. They,
That's right.
they will come to a point that you will say whatever they
want,
they want
to say. That's right.
And Goya's Ghost was great because the guy, the bishop, who was the persecutor of these poor people, all right, these poor people that they were trying to get to confess, they ended up doing it to him at the end. And he ended up having to confess, something he didn't believe. And so what did that show you? It just shows you anybody can confess, even the guy in charge of doing it to everybody else. And I thought it was a great movie, Goya's Ghost. If you ever get a chance to watch that, it's a great movie. Okay, go ahead, Ms. Diane.
Okay, so they were talking about the final solution of the Jewish question meant, and they wanted Hess to admit that the final solution, in spite of the fact that he knew it wasn't, was the extermination of the Jews of Europe. And then they would ask him about various camps, and he was saying, interestingly, in regard to liquidating the Warsaw Ghetto and Treblinka and these other camps that they were using, basically carbon monoxide gas, he said he thought it was fairly inefficient. That's why he used Zyklon B. And Zyklon B is even more inefficient based on the things that we've learned, which is the stuff that Jim has talked about. And one of the videos that's actually stuck at the top of our Odyssey channel, which I think is really good, is this experiment done. Norway, I don't know, a bunch of guys actually tried the Zyklon B on themselves in an equal type of building and had it going on with them. And by golly, they didn't, of course, you don't, having inhaling a fumigant that largely is as a result of tenting or whatever is probably not a good idea, but they went ahead and did it. They wanted to prove the point that Zyklon B is not a good way, an efficient way to exterminate people. You just aren't going to die quickly enough, if at all, apparently, according to them. Okay, so it went through a number of, they kept saying, it's what you said. The Colonel Amen said to Hess, are you saying everything you're saying is true? Yes. All the confessions and memoirs are true. Yes. And he never made these statements in person, but only agreed to them after they had been read out in English. Okay. Obvious errors and lies in his confession. There are a large number of, and I appreciate Peter presenting what he's being charged with. Now let's do a debunking. Obvious errors in the statements. The first one. As revealed earlier, Hess's claim of 4 million murdered at Auschwitz has been acknowledged as untrue, even by the most dedicated Holocaust storytellers, or as Jim calls them, holohucksters, who have all lowered the murdered figure to around 1 million, a reduction of 75% over Hess's sworn statement. His statement claimed that at the time he was ordered to establish extermination facilities at Auschwitz in June of 1941, there were already in the general government three other extermination camps, Belzec, Treblinka, and Wolzeck. There are four serious errors in this single sentence alone. Error number one, the first is the date, June 1941. As outlined earlier, even the Holocaust storytellers claim that the extermination facilities in Birkenau, the ones to which he's referring, were only opened in 1942. With the construction of the large crematory building. This means Hess's claim of 1941 was at least a year out. Error number two. According to the Holocaust storytellers, the Belzec camp was only operational from March 1942 to June 1943, meaning, of course, that it did not even exist in 1941 when Hess claimed that it was already in existence. Number three, according to the Holocaust storytellers, the Treblinka camp was only operational from July 42 to October 43, meaning, of course, that it did not even exist in 41 when Hess claimed that it was already in existence. And the most serious error has, however, Hess's claim that there was an extermination camp in existence at a place called Wolchek. In fact, Wolchek does not even exist. And there has never been a place in existence of that name, then or now. It is a completely made up and totally fictional camp, his fantasy camp. Lastly, in discussing this, Sobibor was only put into operation in April of 42. This means that even if he did mean this camp instead of Wolchek, but he meant Sobibor, it also did not exist at the time that he claimed it did in his statement. Hess claimed that the camps were under the Einsatzkommando of the security police in SD. This is completely untrue, and Hess, as a senior officer and later a senior inspector of the camp system, would certainly have known it. I have a theory about misstating or overstating, over-exaggerating. I'll explain that in a minute. In fact, the only link that the security police had to the camps was the authority to order the detention of political prisoners in the pre-war concentration camps. The major camps, such as Auschwitz, were under direct control of the concentration camps inspectorate, and this organization was later incorporated into the SS, main and administrative office. It is patently absurd to claim that the camps were under the control of the Einsatzgruppen. Okay. Okay, the nonsense contained in Rudolf Hess's statement about liquidating 80,000 in Treblinka, never mind the fact that it fails the corpus delicti test, which we've talked about, mass gassings, as he described it, could never have been carried out in that manner. See the earlier discussions on the topic of the underground gas chamber, which we had spoken about. Would in any normal court of law have been reason enough to dismiss them as fantasy if they follow rules of evidence, which they did not? This was, of course, not done. And a day after his appearance in court, Hess's claims were world news. The first time the Globe had ever heard such shocking details, the Globe, the whole world. The fact that they were at variance even with the establishment version of events did not stop these confessions from being used as proof, corpus delicti notwithstanding. And even though they were also in contradiction with the statement made by his successor as Auschwitz Commandant Richard Baer, who denied ever having seen gas chambers, period. Hess's torture and forced confession, that was something that was very clear, has been brought out in numerous. There is a book entitled Legions of Death, The Nazi Enslavement of Eastern Europe, talked about the extracting information by torture. and I think this was a Rupert Butler and others, British authors and such. But there was another one, Bernard Clark, the Jewish-British soldier who captured Auschwitz Commandant Rudolf Hess for his information. He openly boasted about torturing Hess and said that after the camp commandant was arrested in March 1146, it took 3 days of torture to obtain a coherent statement. This coherent statement was the one signed at 2:30 a.m. in the morning of March 1446, as detailed in the Butler book, March 1146. A Captain Cross, Bernard Clark, and four other intelligence specialists in British uniform. This is appalling, and these people should be brought up in charges. Forced their way into Hess's home and threatened his wife, shouting at her, "If you don't tell us where your husband is, we'll turn you over to the Russians, and they'll put you before a firing squad. Your son will go to Siberia." That's our allies at work, and they should absolutely have been brought up on charges regarding this. There's a picture of Hess photographed as he admits the murder of 4 million people at Auschwitz, a figure now openly admitted as untrue. Okay, what happens to a person when they're under this kind of torture? Nobody ever talks about this, and I think it's really cool. What happens to a person? It's called schizoid apathy at Nuremberg. It's a symptom of schizoid personality disorder, which according to the American Psychiatric Association's official diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders is a condition marked by odd or eccentric ways of thinking. This disorder makes them appear emotionally cold or indifferent and uninterested or unresponsive to events that would typically elicit an emotional response in others. It is most common in people who have suffered major trauma. I can't think of any more of a major trauma than being tortured for 3 days by five psychopaths. The explanation is clear. Hess had been beaten and tortured into admitting to horrendous crimes, and he had been completely psychologically broken. He agreed to absolutely anything his interrogators demanded, so no matter how outrageous and false they may have been. And that's what Jim talked about in Goya's Ghost. He was, however, not broken enough to be trusted to get the story right, because he kept changing details. On the witness stand at Nuremberg, and thus was not allowed to read out his statements, he was only allowed to confirm them with a yeah and actually deliver any evidence in person, and not to actually, because he was not allowed to because he couldn't be trusted. His confessions containing obvious inventions and fantasies were taken as fact, even though they completely failed the legal test of corpus delicti, that is, supporting physical evidence. Rules of evidence were ignored during Nuremberg and the other trials. After a quick show trial in communist-ruled Poland, Hirsch was hanged at Auschwitz in public, and gallows used to hang him is still one of the tourist attractions at the camp. How ghoulish can you get? Now, I maintain that a number of these individuals, now Goering, I don't think ever admitted, never buckled. I also think he probably took a cyanide pill. or they killed him because they knew he wasn't going to confess, no matter what they did to him. Is that particularly as came out, what seemed to have come out during Vietnam, is that when in Hanoi, that these the POWs, when they were tortured and were supposed to come up with a confession, would spell out torture by blinking their eyes. And I maintain that these individuals, these Germans who were being tortured, provided the most outrageous testimony to get people to, at some point or in the future, to question that their testimony was not valid. Done.
Okay, so you covered all those points, and that's good. Yeah, people, you know, people never see the other side of the story. They only hear how bad this guy was with no defense. He can't defend himself now. He's dead. All right, but The fact that they even hung him right after the trial, which is hard to understand because usually when people get a verdict of, you know, death penalty, people usually have to appeal, but that it didn't work at that time anyway.
What is it you always say in regard to dead men?
Tell no tales.
That's right. They're not going to come back.
So they had to get rid of all the major people, and that's why after Huss, the last commandant of Auschwitz was Baer, Richard Baer. All right. And he actually, you know, they caught up to him. They found him. And he was a big, husky, brute of a guy. He actually was a tree guy. He worked at trees, cutting down trees and stuff like that. But anyway, they found him. They got him. They brought him to trial in 62 or 3, maybe 3, the Frankfurt trial. That's where he was brought to trial. And, you know, again, he acknowledged that there were no gas chambers. There was nobody being killed in that camp. That was his story. Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing about that, with this kind of odd, is he was going to go on trial and obviously give his defense. His testimony, his side of the story, that there were no gas chambers. But, gee, guess what happened to him? He ended up getting a heart attack and dying. Big husky, good, strong guy like him just so happens to get a heart attack before the trial.
Well, probably not. I mean, I'm sure he had a heart attack. It's easy to induce when you give him the right medications.
No, I know.
Yeah, for sure.
You just have to laugh at this stuff to see what has happened. And nobody knows about this stuff because when it comes to, see that right now, you'll never ever hear the defense of anybody. It's always going to be what they claim the Jews did. They did this, they did that, blah, 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 blah. And you're never going to hear the other side of the story. Never going to happen.
Exactly. So, is Diana going to play the next song?
Okay. So you have another song you want to bring in, right?
Yeah. She's got them.
Okay. Let's bring in another song.
This is good. Diana. This is only a couple minutes.
Okay.
Oh,
Presenting that. Appreciate it.
Okay. That was a very good video. People don't understand how much editing goes into
doing a video
like that. You're going to bring every little picture in, put it in a spot. You know, it's just tremendous. So that whoever did that video did a tremendous job. Exactly. Okay. Uncle Murray, Vinny, what's up? You're in a show tonight.
You're on hot seat.
Always in the vein, Hoaxbusters. Hey, something special for you guys. You ready for this? I got Ethel Merman. Ethel Merman's going to sing happy birthday to Adolf. Here we go.
Okay.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Adolf. Happy birthday to you. And many more.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
That was
thanks, guys. So I got a bunch of great videos on the channel. There's only one video I want to talk about real quick, and it's about Weimar America. Weimar America. It's
good
been
point.
Digitalized. It's been digitalized. You know, if we saw our kids being pimped out on the street corners, we'd be doing something. The problem is they're being pimped out on their computers and their phones.
And schools, too.
And school. Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. But, you know, I just want to mention that. Look on my channel. You'll see I got a bunch of great videos for you guys. You won't be bored, I promise. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Wonderful. But you guys got good stuff too as well.
All righty. Very good.
Of course. Hoaxbusters.
Appreciate you.
Okay. So, all right. There's nobody else in the waiting room to come out. I thought I had Reese coming in to talk a little bit tonight, but he's not here yet.
Well, we invited Henry and also Henry. Ryan. Okay. I'm not sure. Okay.
All righty. Okay, so this is Vinny's site. All right.
Oh, awesome! Awesome.
Okay.
Good.
Well, I guess I should tell you what's there, right? So that first video, that girl, that woman was just murdered by someone. We don't know, but she was doing blind items on Dollhouse Diddy, 50 Cent, all these freak rappers, and now she's dead. Mm-hmm. You know, weird stuff. The next one, a pedo. He brought a gun to a pedo sting, and you'll see how that ends.
Okay, well, that guy's on Men in Black. That's a Tony Shalhoub. But
that's Tony Shalhoub. It's a great thumbnail. Great thumbnail.
That is
the guy. He left a manifesto. The guy Max Azzarello, who burned himself. Well, he's not dead, but he's in pretty bad shape outside of Trump Tower. Okay. So you left the manifesto, and the link is there.
Exactly. So this is something there. That just happened, or what?
Yeah, yesterday or a day ago. Yeah.
And so this guy lit himself on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That just doesn't sound like
he lit his nuts.
Wow.
No. He most likely he was a Manchurian candidate, probably hypnotized like a Sirhan, you know?
Yeah.
Some kind of nonsense guy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the last one I mentioned, the one right below that video is the one I'm talking about. The OnlyFans girls are broke. That one you guys should take a look at. It's very, look at my verbiage. I tell you, Weimar America. It's here. It's now. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
Okay.
And of course, the little Tay AI video. That's my tribute to Adolf. And that'll be trending until midnight.
How many videos do you have up there on your site?
On BitChute.
The about Sarah Hill tell you it's yeah.
Wow. Look how many views you have. Holy moly. You got 100 million views.
Well,
the fun thing is
10 million.
I love when people
is it 10 million?
They complain about the thumbnail. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's a lot of views.
Yep.
They complain about the thumbnail. Say, listen, the thumbnail is there to remind you our job is not done. Okay, they're after the children.
Yeah.
Until that changes, that thumbnail is there, you know, to remind you. So thanks again, guys. I appreciate
you. Got a lot of subscribers too, 17,000 subscribers.
Good job.
I got lucky, brother. I just got lucky.
Well, I mean that's you know those figures, if you translate them into YouTube, I mean 17,000 subscribers would be like probably about 100,000 subscribers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot, a lot of people.
No, but you don't like me, though, brother. What can I do?
Good. Well, that's good. You're getting people to see what's going on. And, you know, every little bit helps everybody that gets a BitChute channel. That's why I encourage people to get BitChute channels and just put – look, you don't have to do nothing. Just mirror our sites to your videos to yours or download them. There's easy ways of downloading videos, there's BitChute downloaders or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you just upload them to your site. That's all you have to do.
You don't even have to edit them or, in any way, it just basically a cop, like mirror, like Jim says, it just, you're copying them, uploading them.
Yes. So much that people can do. It's just a lot of people don't do anything. You know, they come on your site and they talk and they make comments or whatever. But, I mean, you know, just get things out there, get it to more people. Put links to our videos to people.
Yeah.
You know, there's really a lot people can do just sitting home doing nothing. You know, you don't have to go out in the street protesting or doing this and that. I don't know what it's going to accomplish. But
right now, it's the info war, and to coin the phrase, but it is. It's the information wars. That's where the battlefield is.
Right.
Amen.
Okay. All right. So let's see what we have to go to there. I'm waiting for other people to pop in, but if they're not going to pop in, then we're just going to
cover your videos.
Okay. So if you want to go to my site, then we could look at some of the things I've been putting up.
You've got some good short videos too, some that I thought would be helpful.
Okay. Oh, go to my videos because I want to show Ryan Masano. Had a nice little short video at his meeting, all right, city council meeting. So if we want to go to there, that'd be great. And we can
A great one.
Yeah. All right. So, let's see. Okay. There's Ryan Masano right there. Let's play that video. It's only 2 minutes, but I think he does a tremendous job going before people. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't say he's wrong.
Will shock many, and that's because we've all been brainwashed from birth. Time to take your children out of public schools and colleges. Throw away your television. Stop watching movies. Stop listening to the radio. Stop reading newspapers and magazines, and get off social media except for Gab. Television, radio, and movies have been run by those who follow the Talmud since they were invented. My website is MasanoNews.com. I also have my own radio show, Ryan Masano show on Speak Free Radio. So if anyone has a problem, come on my show. I'll listen to you. Let's talk about the Jewish Talmud. If you're a woman and you're not a Jew, according to the Talmud, you're a whore and a prostitute. And by the way, I've got 3 million views for Sacramento. Thank you for what you're doing. You're going to bring millions more. Mm-hmm. If you're a woman and you're not a Jew, according to the Talmud, you're a whore and a prostitute. If you're a man and not a Jew, you're an animal and a beast. The Talmud says the best non-Jews deserve to be killed. It also legalizes child molestation, homosexuality, murder, lying, cheating, stealing, deceit, transgenderism, and much more. Now, we have four victim groups in America listed in order. You cannot criticize them. First are Jews, and you could tell. Thank you for the demonstration. Second are homosexuals and transgenders, and I see the rainbow flag. Third are non-whites. Fourth are women. The media says white men are racist, but any mistreatment of whites cannot be racist. Of course, the response of Jews when you criticize legitimate Jewish wrongdoing is to holler Holocaust. Now, whether it happened or not is worthy of consideration, but let's give our Jewish friends the benefit of the doubt. If the Holocaust happened, Jewish communism also happened, murdering 100 million. So why do we constantly hear about the 6 million alleged victims of a Holocaust, but rarely about the 100 million murdered by Jewish communism? Because Jews control the money and media. That's why. Talmudic Jew bankers took control of America in 1913 with their bogus Federal Reserve Act and the 16th Amendment income tax and 17th Amendment. I'll end there.
All right. So keep that. Just keep the video up, not playing, but I want to show the audience. Can you get that, the audience? All right. I want to just go over a couple of things that I'm going to point out here. Okay. First of all, you notice there's more, it seems to me anyway, as I look, there's a lot of women in that mm-hmm. audience. Mm-hmm. That was the whole point too. You know, you have all these women, and I was listening to Ryan's show today. Okay. Right before mm-hmm. we went on, I was listening to his. He made a really good point. And a lot of women aren't going to want to hear this or like to hear this, but most women today are Democrat. The Democrats
vote Democrat. Okay? Yeah.
They vote Democrat. Mm-hmm. And that would mean they are highly for the Jews, they're highly for transgender rights, gay yeah. rights, you know, all the alphabet people, all their rights, you know, yep. everything that's contrary to conservatism or whatever you want to say, they are for. And so the women in our country, you know, unless they're women like the woman we have in our organizations that stand up to the truth, they are really out in cloud nine on left field. I mean, they really are. So notice, again, the people that came up who held the signs, and let's just look at the signs. I mean, this doesn't show all the signs, but first of all, you get the rainbow, obviously, people, which would be all the gay people. I call them sodomites, okay? Yeah. Call them what they are. It comes under one umbrella. You're all sodomites, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, then you have, I would think, I'm trying to understand what this sign is there.
Isn't that a Muslim sign?
Well, yeah, to me it looks like that's Muslim.
And Muslims yeah. wouldn't allow or tolerate the transgender and
well, I know, but they might be gay Muslims.
Well, maybe they get away with that in this country, but even on the cop shows I've seen, they don't.
Okay, so then you had the gay another gay flag, and then you had a guy that was holding a flag behind all of them. And his was a Jewish flag.
Jewish, yeah. There you go. Rim fan.
So, I mean, this whole situation here, he goes to this meeting, all right? He speaks. He only gets 2 minutes. 2 minutes. He got people coming in back of him.
Yeah.
Now, if he did this to somebody else,
yeah,
you think they would have allowed it?
No.
I don't think so. I think they would have said, you can't do that. Like if he came up with a flag that was, you know, they didn't like, all right, I think they would have said something to him or try to kick him out of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my opinion. Okay, so now you have way in the back, you get a cop, obviously. The cop's, you know, waiting to, you know, obviously pounce on him if he says something wrong or whatever. If they bring the gavel down on him to get him out of there, the cop's ready to do it. And, of course, all the women here are just, again, the women today are just really not good women. I hate to say it. They're not standing up for what's right. You know, Miss Diane, would you like to say anything about that, being a woman?
No, I have to agree. And a lot of women will say, for example, if they're single, I'm waiting for the for the right guy. The thing is, you have to be the right person. That's always got to be preeminent. And your allegiance must be to the Lord and his way of doing things. And I guess that's the problem. A lot of people have departed from the faith, But get back to the book. Find out what God wants us to do as women. And a man is not going to want somebody who is not prepared to be a helpmeet person, somebody who is going to join him in his efforts.
Okay, so since we're on the topic, and I have at least one woman here that might want to talk, and anybody else can chip in too, why do you think the women are in this position today? Why would you think?
A lot of, unfortunately, as a result of, and Jesus spoke about, in order to capture a person's household goods, you have to bind the strong man. In order to lasso a family, you have to bind the strong man. The strong man is supposed to be the husband. He's supposed to be the one, the protector, the provider. Now, again, as a result of tearing down men or men who buckle under this kind of pressure, they don't have that. And a lot of women have had to take the reins in the family and providing and taking care of the household. They figure if they're going to have to do that, then they're going to also have a say politically. Unfortunately, it's not the Phyllis Schlafly of the 70s, the conservative women's movement of conservative women of America. And so they're then being assaulted. So it's a double whammy. If the white man, particularly husband, father, is being assaulted and hogtied, it affects the woman. She's going to be affected. Then, of course, domino theory is going to affect the kids too. And so what you see are women who are, they won't be in their place, quote unquote. And that's very, very denigrating to say you need to be in your place.
Okay, so would you say, let's just go back to, you got to trace back a problem to where it starts, okay? So to me, it would seem that the man is not taking up his role, his biblical role in, if he has a family anyway, taking, control of the family and being there to do what he should be doing in the right way, right? Would you say?
I would say that he has allowed himself to be beaten down, or he has failed to maintain his own spiritual strengthening. A lot of guys, they'll work out, they'll go out to the garage and work out lifting weights and stuff. What about the spiritual lifting weights? Do you spend time with God? Do you pray for your family? And most of the time I could say, no, they don't. They don't do that. And so we have to step up.
Okay, so the whole thing is at some point in time, the male, he either was beaten down by the people around him. He was just beaten down to where he is a wimp. He's a nothing now.
Allowed that to happen because you don't have to allow it.
He's a nothing burger. Okay, and then the wife now just has to take over the reins
because
he's been beaten down so badly. And what I say, but what does it go back to? Feminism, see? Because
it's kind of a two-edged sword, and that's the Frankfurt School brought that onto, which is interesting, because in 30, when Hitler came to power, these Jewish professors found, we're entering into a huge depression in the States. They were able to find professorships and teaching positions in Columbia University. That just doesn't happen. And then there they began to insinuate their horrible attack on the family, the church, and the government. And so it's definitely Jewish feminism.
One thing I've noticed about, because I used to deal with a lot of Jewish people in my work, and it seemed like the woman ran the house in all these families. The woman did. The men were just wimps.
Yeah,
they were just wimps, But the Jewish women seem very, very,
very dominant.
Yeah, dominant, yeah. Controlling.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I think that's a big problem with the Jews. I mean, they got a big problem there. Of course, you're never going to fix them anyway. But
no, I'm not interested in fixing them. No, it's important is finding out the relationship that a woman has with the Lord is the most important. I'm not saying she also needs to know where to draw the line, because some men are as a result of their frustration at being emasculated, will take it out on her. She does not have to put up with that. There are a lot of things, but she needs to understand what her rights are as far as the Bible teaches, not what the law says, what the Bible teaches. And there are many avenues that she can go to, but there's always a way to honor your husband without letting him walk all over you. I've had to deal with this in a number of different venues with people. I used to live in a cult that kind of prided themselves on keeping their women in their place. And it's something that the guys, when they come out of this, have a real hard time dealing with. They still think they need to treat their wives with a emotional baseball bat.
That's one way of putting it. Okay, so we can move on. There's nobody else in the room, right? No, in our green room here.
That was excellent, by the way. That's excellent springboard for this type of discussion. Excellent.
Oh, no, no. I think it's important for people to understand what has happened. And we're never going to get it back, folks, at this point. I can't see it happening. I can't see, when you got 80, whatever the hell percent of the women are feminist today in some way.
Yeah.
Okay. And it doesn't matter what religion you are, Jewish, Catholic, Protestant.
That's right.
It doesn't matter.
The feminism seems to trump all of that. We have a two-part series on relationships, you and I do, that we have done. That's on BitChute.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we got a big problem here. I don't think it's ever going to get better. And I agree.
It's a downhill slide. It's like going down the bowl of a toilet. It gets tough to swim your way back out.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. All right. Let's get back to my videos, because there's nobody else in the room to talk to.
That's fine. If there is someone, I'm going to do a commercial in about 7 minutes.
Yeah, I get it. But we can at least get back into.
Yeah. If she goes to the top, then we can look at what's available on the shorter end.
I've been putting up some good videos here.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Some are interesting. Some I don't find terribly interesting.
Again, I put videos up on my site just to get people to talk about a lot of different types of topics. Yeah,
for sure. So can we have Jim's BitChute? Thank you, Diane. I appreciate that. Okay, not that one. We did the birthday celebration. That's the next song that I think that.
Oh, that, you're going to play that next?
No, I think she's already played that one, come to think of it. There is
That was the one that the long
with
one.
All the people. All the people.
Okay. All right. I put some again. Okay. Ryan Masano, you and I did our walk and talk today. We got out there to do that. Let's see what else.
Let's talk about this movie that's coming out.
Okay. Yeah. Let's play that. We got a couple minutes before.
You got a teaser on there. So
that's okay. This is a movie that's coming out. I guess it has to do with the COVID and the shot and all that stuff.
It's a whistleblower movie.
He was an orphan of conflict in Africa. He was smart and bright, and then we got him home and he crashed right in front of us.
Apparently, we're in the midst of a mumps outbreak.
Another?
Some people, some very important people, are saying our vaccine does not work.
You're going to want to read this. We have a U.S. monopoly and a major share of the world market for MMR. And we own the only one that works.
Except that it does not.
We all sign contracts, Jeff. Company interests above all others.
Make it work.
They fake the data. It's all there.
They cheated on every level.
You said you're a lawyer.
Family law.
And you want to understand why.
Let me see it.
They couldn't get the result they wanted, so they re-engineered it. Not objective to improve the vaccine, but find something that gets them the result they want.
Fix it, gentlemen. 96%.
The vaccine fails, we're all out of a job.
It has failed. You need to get what's going on here.
Is he in danger?
Internal memos were released. Quote, we may have to seek them out and destroy them where they live. Chili knows. And yes, he is in danger.
What about Ishal?
Your son and every other son and daughter depends on whether or not you choose to live by their rules.
Incineration.
immediately. Can we trust him to keep it together?
Were you aware?
Some tests included the weakened strain, I believe.
And did you approve?
I guess so.
Were you aware of the lab's failure to demonstrate efficacy of the mumps vaccine, a level required by the FDA?
No, to respond to the FDA's concern.
And leave a dangerous vaccine on the market.
Dangerous?
Objection.
Strongly recommended booster shots.
Of course you did.
What have they got? That's right, nothing's what they got.
Would you please identify this document for us? Please identify Exhibit 2 for me.
They've got stuff.
No, wait, wait, wait!
Exhibit 3.
This is a confidential document.
Objection. These were shredded.
It's a protocol.
They've got the sheets. They've got the evidence I was told they didn't have.
No one will ever believe them again.
I hope.
Okay. So that's a movie that's coming out. I don't know exactly when it's coming out.
No.
But look at the topic, okay? I find it interesting that, well, of course, I don't know who's produced this movie. Is it being... It's probably not being produced in Hollywood or that end of town.
We can find out more about it. Yeah, you have to be careful because there's another Protocol 7 out there, which is interesting. I wonder if that's an attempt to cloak the prevention of people seeing this one. You have to make sure it's a whistleblower story. It's actually about the mumps vaccine in this case.
This one here?
That's a weird one.
Yeah, apparently there's a mumps epidemic, they were saying. Well, the side effects were affecting her son.
Oh, okay.
And so that's
I didn't know what exactly. It's not about the COVID that we had now or anything like that.
No, might as well be. Okay. No, not about the COVID.
Well, it's the same story.
Of course it is. Of course. Yeah. And the process is the same. And how they're rushing through. They're not testing. And that one guy in there, I says, I thought we shredded this. They've got our papers. They can prove they were fakes. I thought that was great.
Well, that's going to be a good movie.
If it comes out, it sees the light of day.
Vinny, you have something to say? Because we're going to go to a break in about another minute here or less.
And then we're going to come back.
We got CB in the house here. Yeah. And we're going to go on. But we're going to take a quick break since we're here. Because I don't want to have to break it after.
No.
We're going to go to Money Tree Publishing again. Speak Free Radio, thank you for having us on. Money Tree Publishing, thank you for being there to publish the books and all the good videos and that you have. Europa.
DVD series, yep.
Yep. Greatest Story Never Told.
Yep.
So a lot of great stuff there. And again, a few folks who are watching now or listening to now, if you want to order something from that site, if you use Hoax, I guess, you will get 10% off.
If that discount is still being applied, I'm not sure if that is.
Well, that's what I was told. A lot of good books here. Again, a lot of good books. And Dave was saying he's not going to have too many books up on that site.
Right.
They're going to just get the best ones to put up there. And hopefully you can go to that site. So basically that's where we stand with all the good books, the videos, everything's there. Look, our information is there. It's just a matter of finding it and getting to it. If you're not going to get to it on Amazon. Just remember that, folks.
No.
Not going to happen.
Right.
No way. No way.
Yeah. No way. Right. Okay. So let's get back to our discussion. We've got CB. Are you in here with us?
Good evening, Hoaxbusters.
Hi there, CB.
What's going on? How's it going, Uncle Murray? Great videos. Great videos.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to offer up some commentary on a couple of things you guys were talking about earlier. That movie that I saw it said produced by Dr. Andrew Wakefield. I don't know if you guys know who Andrew Wakefield is, but
I saw that.
He's a British doctor. I think he's still around. He's pretty old at this point. I think he's probably about 80-ish, but he was like the main whistleblower. Yeah, Uncle Murray said vaxxed. Yeah, he was back in like 1996. He was the one that came out with all the whistleblowing stuff on how bad vaccines are, period. And he's the one he did like the studies. He's British. He did the studies in the UK, and it showed like a lot of stuff that had to do with like gastrointestinal problems and things like that in children that had been vaccinated. But also, I think he's the one who put forward the science that showed the correlation between kids who were autism damaged from vaccines, but they also had like serious like colorectal problems and gastrointestinal problems. And also Dr. Andrew Wakefield, and he was the one that looks like he sponsored that. He's a pretty good one. But the other thing I wanted to touch on was when, not to turn the clock back on you, but when you guys were talking about the whole situation with feminism and with women and all that. I don't know if you guys know this. I learned this some years ago. It didn't really surprise me. I think I found this about maybe about 15 years ago. Apparently, the modern family legal system in this country, so like the family court system, you know, when men and when a married couple gets a divorce and then the kids have to be shared custody, all that, basically that's a Jewish court system. So, and it's actually separate and even more Talmudic than our Masonic system that is the general court system. So it's actually based on a Jewish system, the same one that they have in Israel. Now, apparently, when in Judaism, when a man and woman get divorced, the man has like no rights. It may be a little bit different amongst the Orthodox, but like in Israel, a guy can't even leave the country if he owes alimony, apparently, in their legal system. He has like absolutely no rights, and the woman has all the rights. And then there's a good movie I would recommend everyone watch if they get a chance. It's called The Believer. So way back before Ryan Gosling was this big famous movie star, back in like the year 2000, 2001, he did this independently made movie called The Believer, where he plays this Jewish kid who becomes a neo-Nazi because he like totally rejects his whole Jewish identity. Now, the movie, of course, wants to make the quote-unquote Nazis or the white supremacists all the bad guys. I'm not telling people to watch this because I want to wave a flag for the Jews, but it's a very good movie if you want to understand crazy Jewish psychology and how fucked up the Jews are and why they're so bizarre and evil. Like, for example, that scene right there where he's having this conversation with this reporter who was working undercover on reporting on the neo-Nazis. He basically lays it all out at how screwy the Jews are. And he says basically one of the things he talks about is how the Jewish nature is essentially female. Now, I'm not saying this to put women down, but when you study, like, this is going to sound kind of esoteric, especially to all the Christians that are listening, but when you study, like, the real deep meaning of all these things, the Jewish nature, Jews actually put women on a higher spiritual plane than they do men. That's actually what Judaism teaches. And a lot of, like, people who are into, like, remote viewing and mysticism and Eastern philosophy and Gurdjieffians and things have studied this stuff where basically that you find that the feminine energy is the devil's energy. This is why, like, in Eastern philosophy, and one of the problems a lot of Christians don't study Eastern philosophy, if you look at, like, the yin and the yang, there's the balance of energy between the black and the white, the right and the left, the feminine and the masculine. So becoming, like, for example, you could argue that Jesus and some of these other people like Buddha or Muhammad, or, well, maybe not Muhammad, but Buddha and some of these other folks, they were balancing energy, okay? That's part of the divine kind of a thought process. And getting your mind more in tune with God is becoming in balance.
Oh, brother.
So that's in Eastern philosophy. That's not really taught much today amongst modern Christians. So he's one of the things he teaches that Jews, the Jewish essence is feminine. And he talks about how like Jews are into this oral sex perversion because a Jewish man can't really, it's not easy for him to penetrate a woman during sex act. And I'm not saying this to be vulgar here. It's just, it talks about the nature of them. And he says Jews are always very into, this is why like Jews are really into porno and all this stuff, because it's the demonic energy that dominates them, which is the feminine energy, and it's the female energy. And like they used to talk about, let's say, in the days of like the witch hunts and things like that, how women were more likely to be possessed by the devil and things like that because they're more in tune with that feminine demonic energy. So maybe that helps to offer some folks some insight into those things that you were discussing. But the whole court system with the family courts and all, it's completely Talmudic, totally Jewish system. That's why the men are treated like shit. The judge gives everything to the woman. I knew a guy a couple of years ago in New Jersey. He was an engineer. I think he was making about $150,000 a year at the time. The judge basically gave probably 98% of his paycheck to his ex-wife. And he said to the judge, you know, what am I supposed to live on? This is a guy who probably worked 60, 80 hours a week. Yeah. Just as well, you can go get another job.
Yeah.
I mean, she needs to sit on her ass and have $150,000 a year for doing absolutely nothing but being a bitch. So this is the kind of thing that happens in our society.
Yeah. I want to say in Framingham, the town, city I moved out of, there's a place called SMOC. It's South Middlesex Opportunity Council. And it's supposed to be helping the poor people. But what it really is, it's just a woman run organization that caters to immigrants and women. Nothing for the men. And again, if they go to court, again, this is what they're for. They're all backing the woman and paying for the lawyers, paying for the court, whereas the men get screwed out of everything. And there's no help. There's no organization for men. It's all these organizations are for women to back up the woman and help the woman. It's just incredible because I always say to them, well, do you have any group of organization or whatever to help the men? Mm-hmm. What do you complain about the men. The men are abusive. The men are alcoholics. The men are doing all these things. But what are you doing to help them? You're not doing anything. That's all you're doing is coming against them.
Okay. Right. Well, that's also – I don't know if you know this, with the stupidity of the alcohol prohibition that the Volstead Act introduced in 1920. Now, it was obviously Jews and Masons that got that legislation passed, and that gave birth to the mafia in this country. But the public face of that was something called the WCTU, the Women's Christian Temperance Union, and they were pushing temperance mm-hmm. is staying away from alcohol and things like that, like Ben Frank.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So this is also, I think, a big part of what the great lawyer and constitutional scholar Edgar J. Steele used to talk about, the cultural conquest, or the America's cultural transformation to Judaism. So he said about 15, 17 years ago, America has not actually had a religious conversion to Judaism, but had a cultural conversion to Judaism. Jews came to dominate our culture. Yeah. And America, postmodern America, is totally Jewish in its nature. All institutions of our society are Jewish dominated.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah,
no doubt. All right, listen, if you want to stay in, CB, that's great. If you want.
Yeah, no, I'll at least put Reese come on in.
Reese is going to come in. I think he's been having some technical problems here. Reese, can you hear us and can we hear you?
He's muted himself.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Jim, am I coming through clear or is it broken up?
No,
we can hear you.
Clear right now.
You know what's strange? Your audio sounds like you're gargling while you're talking.
Wow.
It's something weird going on. I don't know what it is.
Can everybody else hear me?
Yes, you're very clear. So it's some type of reception on his end.
Yeah, maybe. Let me just check you're something. Smooth. It could be, let me check, it could be due to one other thing. I'm going to go back to Speak Free Radio.
Or and like see Uncle Murray said, go out and come back in. Yeah.
Let me see. Hold on. If that makes a difference. Let me see if that, does that make any difference?
Well, does it make any difference to you?
Well, we can hear you.
Actually, it's still, no, it still sounds like strange. Let me just see if anything else could be. It could be this one. Let me try this one.
Because he's
okay,
clear.
Now maybe that corrected it.
Well, we can hear you. We can hear you just fine.
We can hear you just fine.
All right.
Yeah, you've been smooth the entire time.
Yeah, right. That's right. You've been very clear.
So, Reese, what's cooking? What's going on? You have a friend with you today, huh?
Yes, I do. The young man.
Hi there.
He's my young apprentice. He's that's kind of my project right now.
I'm trying to get
this kid on the straight road, on the straight path. Right. He's a great kid. You'd love this guy, June.
Okay, so you're the wizard.
Yeah, that's right. Like, wizard.
Yeah.
So Reese, gems of information you got for us?
Yeah, if I was back home, I had quite a bit to share with you, but I'm just going to go. Thanks, June. Thank you. You just closed the window. I'm just going to speak a little bit extemporaneously here. Let's talk about this guy, Max, what was his name, that it did a little self-immolation in front of the courthouse
Max Azarello.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the name, yeah. I'm going to tell you something. There's something about this that's strange, and of course, it happened on April the 19th. Now, you guys probably know the history of April the 19th and how it ties together with the 13-day satanic high calendar period from April 19th to May 1st, which is May Day, Walpurgis Day. But I've been following these April 19th events, you know, some of them are the Waco massacre that took place and was on April 19th, Columbine, Virginia Tech, the Boston bombing was a day or two off from it. The beginning of the first shots fired in the American Revolutionary War on April 19th. But there's many April 19th deaths and massacres. Now, why does this one catch my eye? Because not just anything that happened on April 19th, I'd be willing to jump on the bandwagon and say that this is some kind of a satanic ritual. I believe this may have been, and I'm going to tell you why. Have you guys done any research onto this guy? Does anything strike you unusual about what he did in front of that courthouse?
What, light himself on fire? Is that the guy you're talking about?
Yes. Let me give you a little bit of the backstory. And it took me a while to find it because there wasn't a single American news outlet. I had to go to, I think it was the Times of, no, the a British journal. I forget which one it was that gave you the backstory, because he had, before he lit himself up with the gasoline, he had taken some leaflets or brochures that he had with him, and he just threw them around inside that little plaza and then lit himself up. Something reeks about this story, and it reeks because I know, and I'm sure you guys are familiar, with this MK Ultra mind control. If you look at the story about this guy, Max, he looks like your typical MK Ultra. Here's what happened. He had a friend, I can't remember her name, it was Katie, I think, something from college, a Jewish friend of his, that he still kept in contact from New York City. And when he started doing the research into the New World Order and Klaus Schwab and the vision that they have, the theft of money through Sam Bankman-Fried. I mean, this guy started going down the rabbit holes of many conspiracies, the theft of the 2020 election. He started talking to people. Well, this one woman, this girl that she knew, her name slips my mind. I just read it earlier today, so I'm not that familiar with her. You know what she did? She contacted people, friends and family in Florida where he moved to. Now, I think what the story's not telling you is that she contacted someone that made him go and get psychiatric evaluation. It's in the story. Shortly after, this Jewish woman, this friend it was Rutgers or Columbia University, contacted people being alarmed by the incendiary statements that he was making. He was ordered, they don't go into the details, to go in for a psychiatric evaluation. He makes comments about it. He kind of laughs it off. But here's what I think happened. When he was in that psychiatric evaluation, I believe they made him into an MK Ultra program, like they did with Sirhan Sirhan or with John Lennon's killer, Mark David Chapman. Both of them were taken in, especially Mark David Chapman, was brought into a psychiatric facility where he had MK Ultra on him. Now, why do I think this guy was under MK Ultra? Here's why. He starts doing strange things. Everyone that knew this guy said he was very clear thinking, one of the most intelligent, lucid people they knew. Not a whack job, not some crackpot, you know, reputation. A very, very sharp dude. He starts doing crazy things. He jumps in a truck in Florida a few weeks ago and drives off with it. He starts spray painting something in protest. He showed up at some rally or something or in a government building and he started spray painting. Just erratic behavior. But now let's go to what happened in front of the Manhattan Criminal Courthouse on April the 19th. This guy doesn't make a speech. Jim, Uncle Murray, Diana, you know that if you were going to make a final statement in this world, that you were so fed up with the corruption, the election theft, the wars that we're fighting, and where we might be headed right now if Klaus Schwab and Nouriel Harami have their vision fulfilled from the World Economic Forum, you would probably give a speech. You might show up with a megaphone. Mm-hmm. You'd get up on top of a monument and give a speech about everything you knew and warn everybody there with passion before you took your life. This guy didn't do anything. He was like Mark David Chapman that walks up to John Lennon after having his album signed that earlier that day, pulls a gun out, shoots Lennon multiple times, and then just stands there and pulls out a book and starts reading it. Oh. I mean, this is not normal behavior.
No.
Hey, Reese, I just want to interject something. Not to interrupt you.
Yes, sure.
From what I've studied, I don't think Chapman actually shot Lennon. So I don't know if you know about the doorman at the Dakota that
yes,
night.
Yes, I do.
Jose Perdomo. He was one of the the Bay of Pigs Cuban
assassins.
Exiles. Right.
Yeah, he was from Operation 40. That's H.W. Bush's operation.
Correct.
The anti-Castro Cubans,
right.
And you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I think he's the
Jose
one who
Perdomo
shot him.
Was one of those.
Yeah, I think he's the one.
There's always a backup
Lennon,
guy.
And Lennon basically was the fall guy and stood there and got took
right.
the fall.
Yes.
That's what I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's what happened. That's what I think.
And by the way, I have it from witnesses that were there. Do you know? I know the guy that dropped John Lennon off that night. I don't know him personally. I was a very good friend of his brother Danny Camisso, and he said my brother was called in that night. This is what's strange also. They had a normal limousine service that would pick up John and Yoko and bring them to the studio and back. But that night, they had a different service pick him up.
Yeah.
I find that strange. And his brother would never speak about it. He was very tight-lipped about it for the rest of his life. Just makes you wonder. But you're absolutely right. I believe Jose Perdomo fired the shots. Mark David Chapman may have fired his gun the same way as Sirhan may when he was in the Ambassador Hotel that day in California, may have fired shots, but we know that it wasn't the fatal shot that killed Bobby Kennedy.
It was Thane Eugene Caesar shot him from behind the ear, basically. He was one of the security guards that was there.
He
was a famous CIA, or infamous CIA guy. That also, where Lennon was killed was the Dakota, which is like a very evil satanic building. That's where they did Rosemary's Baby, that piece of shit, the French Jew that he's the filmmaker that
Roman
was his
Polanski.
Wife.
Yeah.
Polanski, right.
Polanski.
It was his wife that was satanically sacrificed at the house there in Cielo Drive by the Manson family.
Laurel Canyon.
Right, correct.
Yep.
And then also yeah, scumbag Howard Stern lives in that building, and you know that building has a really dark history to it.
It sure does. And I will add this, that there was also witnesses. I remember listening to a live broadcast on the eve of December the 9th. They had a vigil, and people were calling in to the radio broadcast saying, I was there that night when Lennon was shot, and I heard shots being fired from Central Park, which is directly across the street from the brush. So they also had sharpshooters in the brush. Again, we don't know which bullets were the fatal ones. The sharpshooters might have been there just to make sure if anything went wrong, Lennon would not survive. But you're absolutely right. Jose Perdomo, I mean, come on, guys. A guy that was deeply involved with the CIA hit squad, that was trying to overthrow Castro for many years under the direction of George Herbert Walker Bush as CIA director, just happens to be the security guard the night John Lennon is shot at the Dakota? Really?
Exactly.
And nobody's asking questions about it, right?
Someone's asking the question, why was John Lennon killed?
I think it sounds very threatening.
Yeah, John Lennon was killed because for a long time, he had remained pretty quiet, living a quiet life as a father, a live-in dad, taking care of Sean. But what happened was John Lennon organized a benefit concert for a guy that had been framed up by the NYPD. He was a political activist. The NYPD framed him up to put him in jail, and John Lennon did a benefit concert in Central Park to get him freed, and he was successful in doing it. What I believe happened was, remember the time frame. This is 1980. This is just before Ronald Reagan was going to go into South and Central America and begin taking out dictators, you know, making the region more friendly for Western capitalism and banking interests. So I believe what happened was when Lenin came out of his quiet life as, you know, a stay-home dad in the Dakota, and he started becoming an activist, that raised the antenna of the intelligence community. And they realized something. John Lennon could, with just one PR statement, bring a million people or more flooding into Central Park to get on stage, do a concert, and make political statements. And they realized that this guy posed a great threat, and it would be better to take him out because, you know, it's kind of like the events before 9/11. They knew 9/11 was coming, so they kind of prepared the way for 9/11 by making sure the intelligence agencies were stacked with Zionists, you know, to FEMA, Federal Management Agency in New York City, had all people that were plants in on it. So I believe taking out Lennon was basically just taking out the one voice in rock music. And I got to say this, and I think you guys may agree with me. These guys should be ashamed of themselves. Virtually none of them, the great music icons of the 60s, were ever politically outspoken, even on the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. Only Roger Waters in recent years has emerged as a voice, a man with a conscience. And I believe Roger Waters stands, you know, towers over John Lennon in that respect.
I don't even know who the water guy is.
Pink Floyd, Jim. Come on, what kind of boomer are you? You don't know Pink Floyd?
He's the basis of Pink Floyd. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
By the way, Reese, another MKUltra assassin was that guy, John Hinckley, who shot Reagan. That guy was completely, I mean, totally MKUltra. And most likely, again, supposedly people said they saw a guy on the roof with a gun. And, you know, he may have shot Brady, but we don't know if he really was the one who shot Reagan. And Hinckley's dad was a big oil man who, like, the night before Reagan was shot, was having dinner with, like, George Bush Sr.
I was going to say, there's that connection.
Yeah, flew to Europe and was out of the country. And then that psycho Alexander Haig goes on television and says he's running the country. He was a major player in a lot of this shit.
No doubt. Hi, Kiki.
Yeah. Some good points. It's amazing the control they have over the media, that no one would bring up the connection to the Bushes. I mean, literally, his family was having dinner with the Bushes like a week before, and this is the same guy that shows up in an assassination attempt, and there's no question about Bush, who was a CIA director, possible involvement. I mean, this is incredible when you think about it.
Listen, we got someone else. Everybody stay where you are. We got somebody else that – this is a very good conversation, folks. Very good. Rick would like to come in and say something. Rick, what would you like to say?
How am I coming in?
Fine. Really? Good.
Loud and clear.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I think this Reese guy is on something. You know, Paul McCartney's wife, the Eastman, her real name was Linda Epstein. And her father was a lawyer to the songwriters in New York City. That's the mafia. And there's a very close connection between John Lennon and his attitude to Adolf Hitler. He was, in my opinion, he was not a Nazi, but he was sympathetic to the German. And one thing John Lennon would not go for is this beat called the Holocaust. Very powerful guy that very opinionated. And John Lennon is part of a lot of people that were killed in the 1960s and up until today, that have high profiles and move people one word. If this Reese guy is right, I think they kick him out because he had too much influence over the world. Just like Michael Jackson was a big Palestinian supporter, just like Prince, and so was Whitney Houston. These people have been taken out for politics. And this Reese guy is on to something. I just wanted to call in and say that. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks, Rick.
Very good. Thank you. Anyway, all right, you want to continue on, Reese or CB or Vinny, if you guys want to continue on. you're bringing up some really, really good points here of these people who were voices of, I would say, voices of freedom or some sort of voices of truth.
Well, they were dissident voices, that's for sure.
Well, I don't know if you guys noticed, the Beatles, they basically, like that guy was talking about with Germany and the Beatles being sympathetic, the Beatles basically started out playing in West Germany, like in the late 50s and early 60s, before they got famous. And they're basically tied to something. That's all. It's all MK Ultra stuff. What Fries was talking about, but it's the British wing of it. It's called the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, which is centered in London. That was all started by like Aldous Huxley and all these people to push the Fabian socialism, and you know, George Orwell basically blew the whistle on them and everything. But the whole that ties into the whole thing with Fall, with the fake Paul that Paul McCartney was actually killed supposedly September 11th, 1965, in this fiery car wreck. And then there's one of the Beatles albums. If you play it backwards, you hear them say, like, Paul blew his brains out in the car or something like that. And then if you look at one of the things that a friend of mine, Don Jeffries, who's a published historian, he talks about when Lennon died, supposedly Lennon and McCartney were closer than any two of the other Beatles. They grew up in Liverpool together, and they were, like, really tight. When Lennon died, the press went and asked McCartney what he thought. And he just kind of was like, oh, yeah, it's tragic. Like he really just – he seemed like he didn't give a shit. Whereas supposedly him and Paul McCartney – him and Lennon were, like, super tight. They, like, grew up in the same neighborhood of Liverpool, and they were, like, supposedly inseparable. So if that's true about the fake Paul thing, then maybe that's one of the reasons for McCartney's reaction. And you could see it – I think I probably told you guys about this. If you look at the – I think it's Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. They show these different pictures of the Beatles on the cover at different times in their career. And you look at one of them, the early career picture where Ringo is standing next to Paul. Ringo is, of course, the shortest. But in that picture, him and Ringo are not that different in height. He's only maybe about 3 or 4 inches taller than Ringo. But then in the later picture from the 70s, he's like easily 6 to 8 inches taller than Ringo. And people say like that's where they're telling you that the switch was made, and this newer Paul McCartney was a different guy.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that. It's interesting. I mean, I don't know what much to say about it, but yeah, some people. I think isn't Jim Fetzer into that? Big into that?
Fetzer's into all of that stuff. Fetzer goes very deep. You know, he used to be regular on Jeff Rents, and then I don't know, about 3-4 years ago, he just stopped coming on Rents. I don't know what happened.
Oh, really?
But he used to be on Rents like, you know, 2-3 times a month talking about this stuff.
Oh, no kidding. Reese, do you know about Jim Fetzer? You got to put your sound on.
Yeah, because he's muted himself.
It doesn't show I'm muted.
Yeah, no, you're good now.
You're good now.
Okay. All right, so, yeah, Fetzer got it. The Fetzer's fallout with Rents was over the Bellagio. Remember that mass shooting?
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
And, oh, yeah, the Vegas
Jim
shooting.
Jim Fetzer had some pretty sharp disagreements with him. And honestly, I have to say, I don't always side with Fetzer, but I do side with him here, because there was too many credible witnesses there that were giving eyewitness testimony that was at, you know, variance with what were being reported. For instance, there were nurses that worked in local hospitals, and they were phoned and asked about how many casualties were brought in, and they had been told by, you know, numerous nurses in those emergency intakes that there were no shooting victims brought to the hospitals that night. I mean, how is that possible if all those people were shot in that area?
Except that it was a PSYOP. Yeah, that's all.
All right, we get somebody else who wants to come in. Patrick, you can come in, and let's see what you have to say.
Hi. Yeah. Hi, CB, so you know Donald Jeffries. I actually was interviewed by him not that long ago, a few months ago.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I wanted to say about Jimi Hendrix. He was in a film called Rainbow Bridge just before he died. And in the film, there's this character that's a hippie-type character giving a speech like in a suit and tie with an American flag, and he says something to the effect, I watched in the trailer, he says, do you think the power elite want you to know what you can do? And then just as he's saying that, you see Jimi Hendrix outside a window with an American flag in the window, hold a gun out, and then shoot the guy in the head. So,
yeah,
and he, not too long after that, he was he died.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting. I never really got into all these bands and groups and all these people. Okay, but I've always kind of like said to myself, "What the hell's going on with all these people?
Yeah.
They're dying. Yeah. They're getting shot. They're." You know, I don't know. I mean, it's just really weird.
The whole entertainment industry is run by the CIA and British intelligence and Mossad and all that, Jim. That's what these people – if there was a movie that came out around the same time, like early 2000s, called Josie and the Pussycats, where they basically tell you in the whole – I mean, it was a stupid movie. It wasn't like a well-done movie. But if you watch the movie, that's the whole premise of the movie, is that the CIA and the Mossad and all – they all run the whole – entertainment, basically military industrial complex. It's just the entertainment wing of the whole thing.
The Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah, well, that's how they brainwashed.
That was before. Like, that was before Kennedy. The Manchurian Candidate with Frank Sinatra, where it's they go and they're brainwashed to be a psycho, a killer, an assassin.
Right.
It's interesting. I was talking with John Barber, who knew Frank Sinatra and was going to do a documentary about him. How Sinatra?
John Barber's a great guy.
Yeah.
Jeffries is very proud of his friendship with John
Barber. Yeah. Well, Sinatra, he had written, or there was a song, High Hopes. You've got high hopes. Yeah. We've got, you know, that song. So he had reworked it to be Vote for Kennedy. He did a Vote for Kennedy version of High Hopes. Yes. So he was instrumental.
The Kennedys are basically the epitome of the Irish mafia in this country, and they were tied in. That basically they made a deal. So they made a deal with the Italian organized crime with LCN, and the deal was you get that piece of shit JFK elected, and then what will happen is we'll go easy on Momo Giancana and the other big gangsters at the time, and Bobby Kennedy had it in for them. Bobby was basically the real power behind the throne, and he didn't like them because he had had dealings with them when he went after the union guy. I can't think of him right now.
Jimmy Hoffa.
Exactly. So the mafia had it in for Bobby, and Bobby had it in for the mafia. So when JFK got manipulated, and by the way, very likely Nixon won that 1960 election. They had tons of fraud and everything. And people who listened on the radio said that they felt that Nixon won the debate, that famous debate where, Kennedy got all lauded as being this, wonderful, oh, he's so young and charismatic. The people who heard on the radio said that Nixon walloped him, whereas the people who watched on TV said that Kennedy was the star. And really what that comes down to is the telegenicity. Nixon was not, as good-looking a guy as Kennedy. Kennedy was a little bit younger, even though chronologically they were only about 3 or 4 years apart in age. And of course, Nixon, supposedly he didn't look right. He didn't look like he shaved and all this other stuff. So again, Americans are fooled very easily by image and telegenicity and things like that.
Yeah.
But that was the whole thing with the Kennedys.
They made sure that JFK shined on the screen.
Yeah.
And Nixon looked like a slob.
Of course.
People forget that Nixon was also the vice president at the time.
Yeah,
he was Eisenhower's vice president.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Joe Kennedy was the real power, though, behind the Kennedy dynasty.
The granddaddy, the patriarch of the family. But Kennedy, basically, the favorite son was Joe Jr., who was killed in World War II, and that's a whole other, big conspiracy thing.
He went up in a B-17 filled with explosives. They were using them as drones to fly 20,000 pounds of TNT into a target.
Yeah, and then JFK was the looks, but Bobby had the brains. So they basically, he was kind of the power behind the throne on behalf of the father. And then when they were dead, that piece of shit Ted was supposed to come into the reins. And then Ted, they ruined Ted with Chappaquiddick. So like last week we were talking about the fake moon landing. What a coincidence that Chappaquiddick happened the same weekend as the fake moon landing. Now, my thesis on that is that he wasn't even in the car because he claims that he swam out of the car and the girl was behind him, but somehow she got stuck in the car. Well, I mean, come on, dude. You made it out of the car in this shallow little water in this pond, and yet the girl couldn't get out. I don't even think he was in the car. I think what happened was they had a tryst on the beach. They were ambushed by a team led by E. Howard Hunt, who people reported as being seeing a guy who looked like him and fit his description in the area. They drowned the girl on the beach, put her in the back of the car, knocked him over the head, took him back to Edgartown, and said, "You say that you know were in the car," and it's not. This was how they undermined him, because they couldn't kill him again because the two other Kennedy brothers had been killed, and they tried to kill him out in 1964, right when his plane crashed, and he survived because he was a fat drunk. So, you know, this is their way of sabotaging Teddy. Not that Teddy was any good.
Well, but
they
knew to
it's more insane than that. Don't you know that Mary Jo Kopechne was a champion Olympic swimmer? So what's the odds that in a real car crash that Ted would make it out and she wouldn't?
Right.
Of course. Absolutely ludicrous, the entire thing.
Good point.
Yeah, a lot of interesting things. All you guys that are under 50 years old or 40 and under, you wouldn't know anything about any of that stuff.
This is all like ancient history.
Well, we didn't live through it like you did, but we've researched it.
Well, apparently.
Well, like Joe Kennedy, he ran Paramount Pictures. You know, he was in with Jack Warner and all those people that ran the big movie studios, who had a lot of power over the radio and they didn't have television at the time, but films. Yeah. Particularly, but Joe Kennedy also, he got started with the Jewish Navy running booze during Prohibition from Canada and Kentucky. Kentucky was like the Las Vegas before Vegas. You know, it went from Kentucky to Cuba, and then from Cuba to Vegas. Huh. Essentially, all the gambling.
And, well, but the thing good about Joe Kennedy is he liked Hitler.
Yeah, that's right. That was his redemption.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Vincent Price was the same way, Jim. I don't know if you know that. Apparently in the 30s, Vincent Price was singing Hitler's praise all over the place. And then when he got into Hollywood...
Well, Vincent Price was always a classy guy. Yeah.
Well, he was, but then he also apparently turned gay, so that was another
point.
He went completely to the left. Vincent Price was very supportive.
There's Hollywood.
Yeah.
Exit stage left. Oh, boy.
You're right. Wow. Precisely.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of crazy stuff, I tell you. I mean, it's, you know, going back. But, Vincent Price, you know, good movies. He had some really good movies.
Well, Kennedy, during the bootlegging, the booze running, he had encounters with Winston Churchill, because Winston Churchill was in charge of alcohol in the United Kingdom at the time. collecting the tax.
Yeah, because he was drinking all of it.
Yeah, there go the profits.
Yeah, well, supposedly every time a bottle of whiskey gets, or, you know, scotch or something gets sold in this country, the Kennedys get like a dime or something like that.
Wow.
And the same goes through, you know, the Bronfmans, who were the Canadian Jewish mafia family that they basically run all the Jewish organizations in Canada, where Edgar Bronfman used to run the World Jewish Congress and all that. And they were tied to that. His daughters were with that Nexium cult that they were having the sex.
Well, Bronfman, there was a Bronfman that ran the ADL before Abe Foxman.
Right, same guy, Edgar Bronfman. He died, and I think it's his son running things. But yeah, they're a Canadian Jew mafia family. They own Seagram's. Like the Seagram's 7 and the VO and all that, that's them. Or Seagram, you know, the soft drink.
Let me ask you guys, I want to get your input on this. It has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. But what did you guys think about Herbert Hoover? Of the FBI. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of...
J. Edgar Hoover.
J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah. He had a house right next to LBJ in D.C. when
But do you think they made him look like he was gay or whatever he was. And to me, then I hear the other side saying, no, he wasn't, but they made him look that way so they could use it against him, you know, blah, 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 you know. I've always wondered about that.
I think he's a famous cross-dresser,
from what I heard.
Cross-dresser?
Yeah.
Well, who said that?
Yeah. Well, these are and a lot of people. Have come. Go ahead.
You know, also, I don't know if you guys know that.
Well, he lived with a guy.
Oh, no.
He was living with a guy, which, you know, I don't know. To me, that's kind of odd. But
Abraham Lincoln was gay, too, Jim. I mean, a lot of these people have been gay. Well, Abraham Lincoln was like extremely gay.
Most are on the phone.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Ufa.
But with Lincoln, they found love letters.
Yes.
They found love letters to the guy that he was living with. And listen to this.
not just sleeping in the same apartment, right. sleeping in the same bed for quite a long time. So you know, you could imagine
that's why his wife was really upset. She, you know, she had problems with him. I guess
she's doing seances and things in the White House. My. You know, she was really into the occult.
Looks like she was a witch.
All this New Age stuff. The New Age cult.
Spiritualism was very popular in the mid 19th century. You know, we've kind of lost that. But Harry Houdini was into that. That was one of the things. A lot of people, they say one of the reasons that Houdini was killed was
it's a very Jewish thing. It's a very Jewish thing, you know, the communists and all of that. The communal living, that kind of thing. Yeah. The communists, what do they call that?
A lot of Germanics were into that too, like the Thule Society and the Vril Society. You know, they did that stuff too, like Guido von Liszt and all. They were into that stuff. 19th century. Yeah.
Well, did you know that LBJ liked to spoon with his agents?
Ew.
LBJ.
Well, supposedly LBJ's mother was Jewish. So this is another story I heard years ago from Jim Mars of all people. So not only LBJ was supposedly his mother was Jewish and he had a very strong sense of Jewish identity. You know, he passed himself off as a South Texas WASP, but he was actually his family was Eastern Establishment from Connecticut. While they were moving from Connecticut to Texas, they stopped. Basically, Mrs. Johnson got sick, and in those days, this is in like the 20s, so you know it wasn't like today. You can just go and take some medicine; you're better in a couple of days. So they had to take up a place in Memphis. And they were there for like a couple of months or a year, something like that. And they hired a black lady to be the caregiver and housekeeper. And LBJ's father had an affair with her, allegedly. And the product of that father, or the product of that relationship, was Martin Luther King. And that was Martin Luther King's mother that was the nurse and caretaker.
Wow.
I'd heard that Martin Luther King was going to be Bobby Kennedy's running mate.
I heard that too, but, you know, I don't – we'll never know.
Yeah, you'll never know.
By the way, did you know that Lyndon Johnson
– Go ahead, Reese.
You know, Lyndon Johnson, if you want to know his he got his start with the Jews back in the 1930s, the late 30s, he was bringing communist Jews over through the synagogue, that Dallas synagogue. He was helping bring in communist Jews into Texas for many years. So he became very friendly. And I believe that might be why they worked with Lyndon Johnson to help him oust Kennedy, because both of them wanted him out for different reasons. Mm-hmm. But his tentacles go back several decades prior to being the vice president. Working with these people.
Interesting.
And he was just a total moral degenerate. I mean, Lyndon Johnson was a complete moral degenerate. So it's...
Well, like I said, during his time as, I think it was vice president, he had a house right in the two backyards were next to each other, him and J. Edgar Hoover. So the vice president and the director of the FBI had yards right next to each other. So they were, you know.
That's real convenient.
Yeah.
Mr. USS Liberty. I won't embarrass our ally. What a freak. What a bloody freak.
Yeah, that was a whole another fiasco there, huh? What happened?
Well, Elvis was another major one. And listen, I'm a huge Elvis fan. I love Elvis, love his music, and Elvis. But Elvis was a big player in a lot of this stuff. That's like people, you know, if you ever seen the movie Elvis and Nixon, they leave a lot of stuff out of that. Basically, they made him an honorary FBI agent because they wanted to federally deputize him because he had made so many enemies doing intelligence work. Like one of the reasons why these celebrities are used for this different intelligence work and all is not only they can control them with MKUltra, because a lot of them come from these screwed up family backgrounds where they can hide information in these different personalities that they have, but also a celebrity like a musician or an actor, an actress. Think about how often they go traveling around the world into different countries and things like that, and they can slip in and out very easily because they can say they're there to do a concert or there for a movie premiere or something like that, so they can be couriers of information, secret documents, things like that, and they're less likely to be searched because of their high profile.
Well, it's also why they die so young, too.
Right.
That's right.
They die young because they know too much, they learn too much, you know, they witness crimes, and then they get rid of them. It seems.
Yeah. Well, they also have their own private airplanes and all they're going to know.
And you know, we have Elvis with Colonel Tom Parker.
Yes.
And that was his intelligence connection, I believe. And I do believe you talk about the idea that maybe Paul McCartney died and was replaced. If you look at the evidence for Elvis faking his death,
yes,
the evidence for Elvis faking his death is very compelling, including him making numerous trips to Madame Tussauds Wax Museum the year prior to it, his being fixated on the idea of faking your death, and the fact that Tom Parker had actually, when he fled Europe, he was an expert, in forging documents. And so Elvis, after he dies, there's numerous people that say they saw him, but in particular, his daughter was receiving letters from a guy that was named Orion.
Oh, okay. So
was it Orion?
The John Burroughs one I know was an alias supposedly that he used, and that was one of them.
No, but I'm confusing it. Orion was an Elvis personator that went on stage always with his head covered, that people said they would swear it was Elvis singing. Now,
I heard that he was working as an Elvis impersonator, that, which was like a perfect cover for him.
But why?
It would have been perfect.
Why would Elvis fake his death?
Oh, because he couldn't live life. He knew too much, Jim. But he was also the most famous guy in the world. He couldn't let's say he wanted to take his daughter out for a burger and fries. He couldn't do it because everybody will come swarming.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right.
He had to hide in the trunk of the car and have one of his bodyguards drive him to go get a cup of coffee, on a Saturday, Sunday morning, and he got tired of the fame. The FBI handwriting expert, I got him confused. The guy's name was Jesse. There was a guy that was corresponding with his daughter for years, several years, and they have those letters. And at one point, there were so many people talking about Elvis being sighted back in Germany, where Priscilla's family came from, at her local restaurant, wearing, sunglasses and a hat, but they said it was Elvis, that the insurance company started investigating. So they actually opened a case on it, and they started looking into those letters. That was something that they thought was interesting, because this guy, Jesse, there's a photograph of him, and he looks strikingly like Elvis with some plastic surgery done to his face. But the bone structure, and I've seen the picture compared to shoulders, chest, arms, are like identical to Elvis. More than that, the FBI's handwriting expert, after examining those letters, said, in her professional opinion, it would be impossible for anyone but Elvis Presley to have written those letters to his daughter.
Well, and he supposedly died, I don't know what the exact details, but he died on like a Friday, and then his funeral was like the following Monday. And all of the stuff was made up for his funeral, like the "We Elvis, We Love You" and all this, like all the banners and the T-shirts. And I mean, how do you do that when he unexpectedly died?
Right.
And people who handled the coffin said that it felt like it weighed like, 1,000 pounds. And people say that the reason for that was because there was actually an air conditioner in there that was keeping the wax dummy cool so it wouldn't melt in the hot Memphis sun. But
and
you can't prove this shit.
Somebody said they saw his sideburn fall off while he was in the coffin, and somebody came on and reattached it.
By the way, a lot of people don't know
about that.
He had a twin brother who died at birth named Aaron Elvis Presley, and that that twin brother is buried at next to his fake grave at Graceland. And when you mentioned like Colonel Parker, he was really a Dutchman. His name was like Andreas van Ruyck or something. He killed a woman in the Netherlands. He was like a serial killer or something. He killed a couple of women. And the OSS basically found out. I think the German SS was actually looking for him as a murder suspect in the Dutch police. And he agreed to work for the OSS, which was the forerunner to the CIA. Mm-hmm. And then in order to escape that, and he was an illegal immigrant in this country his whole life up until he died in the late 90s. He never became a U.S. citizen.
And I would suggest that he's the one that helped Elvis get his new identity, to forge a new identity after his death. Elvis had the money to pay him off. I mean, let's face it, plastic surgery, he could have gone to the best plastic surgeons in the world. And the other thing is, why didn't hardly any family members attend his funeral? any close family members. I think they knew. He probably told them because he was a man of conscience. You know, you could tell from his interviews that he might have spoken with them and confided in them what he was planning to do, because that's another strange thing. And also, there was a helicopter the day of his death I'm thinking Gracie Mansion. What is it called?
Graceland.
That saw a helicopter land on the lawn and then depart around the time of his death, which could very well have been Elvis. You know what they say, has entered the room.
Yeah.
He might have been exiting.
Well, you know, they don't let you go into the upstairs at Graceland. And even when Bill Clinton visited there in like 1993, he was president at the time, and he wanted to go to the upstairs at Graceland. They said, no, Mr. President, you can't go up there. Like, they don't allow anybody to go up there. I heard one guy say, and this guy was actually being interviewed by Don Jeffries. This guy, I think he's a disinformationist. I don't remember his name. I have his book somewhere. He claims that it's because it's a crime scene, because Elvis was murdered. Well, I mean, if Elvis faked his death, he wasn't murdered. I think they don't let you go up there because Elvis from time to time was still going and hanging out in there, and that's why that's my personal opinion. Mm. I can't prove that. But they wouldn't even let Bill Clinton go up there when he was president in the early 90s.
Interesting.
Well, you know what? That would be a perfect place to hide, right? Where wouldn't they be looking for you?
Well, and he was working as an Elvis impersonator. You know what I mean? What's perfect cover? I heard that years ago, and I heard supposedly for a while he was living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then later on, you know, so he would go back and forth between DFW and Vegas.
Oh, Uncle Murray, do you know about the DNA tests that were done when the insurance company began an investigation? They actually went, exhumed the body, and took a biopsy, and they say it did not match Elvis, because he had gone in for a biopsy because of his health issues, and they said that it did not match his DNA, the body in the grave.
Wow, interesting.
Well, very likely Jim Morrison faked his death, too, because his grave was like there was a lot of stuff with Jim Morrison's thing, and his father was that Admiral Morrison that he was with John McCain's dad bombing Vietnam and everything. So his grave is like in Paris, and it's like all really small, and it was all kinds of shit with his thing, too.
All this crazy stuff. Well, listen, we're coming to the end. We have a video I think we're going to be playing it.
Well, yeah, the last video to celebrate Hitler's birthday.
Yeah, so we're going to be concluding our show. We had a really good discussion tonight, folks. A lot of good comments, stuff here.
Amazing contribution.
I'd like to give you all, I'm giving you all a Sieg Heil,
okay.
The Roman salute in the spirit of possibly the greatest leader of the 20th century.
That's right. Yeah, that's what we say. And we're going to be playing another video towards Hitler, to Hitler, and that's what we're going to lead out with this video here. But anyway, all you guys, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Jim.
Yeah, we had a good time with you all.
Have a great night, guys.
Anytime you want, you're all welcome to come on so we can discuss all these things. I think it's great. It's going to be a good host for the show. So we're gonna lead out with this contribute to Adolf Hitler and his birthday today, 1889. He was born 135 years ago. So let's leave out with this video here.
Thanks,
thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
You turn up? Is that as loud as it gets? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that video. Very good video. Appreciate that. Want to thank everybody for coming in, tuning in tonight. We had a pretty good show. A lot of good things we talked about. Too many things.
It was amazing,
Too many things to remember. Yeah. But anyway, you can watch if you know someone that missed the show tonight, they can watch it on my BitChute channel. I'll be putting this up maybe tonight or tomorrow, and they can watch it then. So, again, everybody, thank you for being here. And we will talk to you next week. Again, Jim Rizzoli, Diane King, over and out. And Diana Ploss behind the scenes.
Appreciate
all the work you've done with our show tonight. Appreciate it. Okay, everybody. We'll see you next week. Take care now. Bye.
Bye-bye.